Hi, my name is Tanya Pinkett, and I'm talking with Rav Solomon on Days Gone By.
Oh, shalom, my friends, shalom, theater lovers, and performing arts lovers everywhere. This is your old pal, Rabbi Sol Solomon, with you here, talking to someone who has more awards than I have gray hairs, which give you some idea of the count there. This is a woman who has won a Tony Award. She's also got two other Tony nominations. She's won a Lucille Lortel Award, a Drama Desk Award, and a Critics Circle Award. All these different things. She's been on All My Children on TV. You can see her on TV also in Madam Secretary and Gotham. She's also stepped into directing, and she will be doing a one-act play as part of a show called Visionary Voices at the Gloria Maddox Theater. That's over on West 26th Street. She'll tell us all about it and also about her great career. Please welcome and join me in the honor of welcoming to the neighborhood Tanya Pinkett. Shalom, Tanya.
Shalom, Rabbi.
I'm assuming that you are not Jewish.
I am not Jewish.
Ah, damn it. Damn it. Why do they always give me the good?
Well, if Judaism passed down the father line, I have two Jewish children.
Oh, well, there you go, Mazel Miklik. So, are you raising them in the faith at all, or are they agnostic, or where are they at?
They're agnostic.
All right. We're going to have a wonderful interview anyway.
They did get to take their birthright trip to Israel, though.
Oh, Mazel, but are they male or female-ish, or what are they?
They're both male.
Yeah, but so, first thing, were they bar mitzvahed?
No.
Were they, did they get a bris, or did, you know, is there skin down there?
They're not even circumcised.
Oh, my God. They're black people, so they have stuff to spare down there. We don't. God damn. Anywho, tell me, where, Tanya Pinkett, do you keep all your awards and nominations?
Well, I used to keep them in the hallways, but now most of the nominations are in a storage closet, and some of the awards are on my bookshelf.
All right, well, yeah, I love how the nominations are, like, not so important. Now, you know, you got all these awards. We'll put them under the towels, you know. The old photographs from the previous marriage. We'll put the nominations there. Soon you'll be getting so many big awards that the little awards, you know, the Village Voice Obie Award, that'll go in the garage, you know.
Okay. Yeah, I need a garage. If I had a garage, I could put them all up there.
Oh, well, you're in New York. You have an apartment, I assume. Or are you in California now?
I'm in New York, and I have a storage room because, you know, your apartment is so small, you need storage in New York.
I hear you. But you know what? You should be. And I know you were on hard times for quite a while, for a certain period of time. But you should be living pretty large. You work all the time. And you work on TV, and you work in the theater. You should be able to afford a decent, comfortable life now. Am I right?
I got four kids. Two of them are in college.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
And it's just me putting those bills.
This is none of my business, but the daddies don't help? They aren't obligated?
No.
Aye. Huh. So, all right, with four kids, even with a life in the theater, you can't. I totally understand that. So, but you do work. Do you consider yourself either a workaholic, or is it just that actor thing of, like, you never know when the phone's not going to ring anymore?
Well, interestingly, because last year I decided to focus more on television than on theater, you know, I can make in one episode what I make in a couple of months in the theater. So I suddenly had a lot of free time on my hands, and I needed to figure out how to fill it up, so I ended up making a short film that got into about six different film festivals so far.
Ooh.
What came after. And then I did this Tanya Pinkett's Rap Roast Diss video that's on YouTube.
Oh, we'll get to that, believe me. Oh, that's wonderful.
I had a lot of time to, on my hands. You know, you work 2 days on an episodic and you make as much as you make in 10 weeks on a play. So I had a lot of free time last year, and hopefully you'll have a lot of free time this year, so I'm going to do more of my own stuff.
Now, you made, as you said, you made a short film. How did that go? I mean, that's quite a thing to step into, even if you've been an actress and doing theater directing for a while. But to make a movie, that's a thing. How did it go?
I learned a lot. I made a lot of mistakes, but I made a commitment to finishing the film no matter what, and the next one will be even better. I'm going to blow my nose now.
Oh, that's good. Believe me, if you had a Jewish nose, it would take you 2 more minutes to blow it, let me tell you. But I'm kidding. Did you, to make the movie, did you raise money through a crowdsourcing, or did you have a backer or producers, or did you do it yourself?
I funded it myself. I paid for everything myself.
Mitt Mazel, I'm just totally curious. What was the budget for that short film?
I know what I started out to have the budget be, but I probably spent about $10,000-$15,000.
All right. For how long is the movie?
16 minutes.
Okay, that's about right this day. Did you shoot on film or video?
I shot it on the Blackmagic Pocket camera, which is 16mm video, kind of.
Ooh. So is that a particular look you went for?
No, it's just a camera I owned. I like having my own equipment and having the ability to shoot things when I want. And I shot a lot of the B-roll of the film myself.
Nice. I mean, that's how you save, money here, save money there, and that gives you the impetus to make another movie. Do you have the idea for your next film?
I do.
Do you want to say, or you don't? You jinx it if you talk about it.
No, it's based on 2 different books: Joseph Conrad's *Heart of Darkness* and Peter Hogg's *Journey into Darkness*. And it'll be called *Dark Hearts*, and it's a story of the Congo Railway in Africa.
Ooh, okay. I always wondered why they never made a movie of *Heart of Darkness*. I always thought it'd be a great film in there, maybe with Marlon Brando in it. Martin Sheen. No, just an idea I had. It's a shame it never happened. Just kidding. There's a little joke there. Wow. Wow. Just pure silence on the other end of that. All right. Let's talk theater. Because, my God, your list of Broadway, let alone off-Broadway and regional theater, but Broadway credits is absolutely amazing. So, first of all, let's start early on. You were in a musical. A musical flop that has since been more well-known than most other hits, a Sondheim show called Merrily We Roll Along. Do you have memories of that show? And are you in that documentary that I think Lonnie Price was shooting about that show?
I think I'm in that documentary, but I haven't seen that documentary. And actually, when Lonnie interviewed me for the movie, he brought me something that was like a blast from the past. I wrote a pick-me-up letter to Hal Prince after the show closed when I was 19 years old, and Hal kept that letter, and it is in his archives, and Lonnie gave me a copy of that. It was really kind of amazing to meet yourself at 19 years old and me trying to, you know, tell Hal that, you know, the show was ahead of its time. Its day would come.
Well, you were certainly right about that. I mean, it may not be in the top tier of Sondheim, but anything in Sondheim is the top tier of musical theater to begin with. When you looked at that letter again, did you remember writing it, and are you the same person in some ways that you were when you were 19?
I think what's the same about me is that I have a way of seeing into the future in the sense that I'm just a very forward-thinking person, and no matter what's going on in the moment, I have a way of seeing underneath what's really going on, despite what it looks like. I mean, like, I'm one of those people who knew Trump was going to win.
Ooh, okay. You and Trump. There you go.
Not just me and Trump, but, you know, Scholastic Publishing, they poll high school students, and they've been doing it for 56 years. They poll high school students.
Isn't that painful? Okay, yes.
And the high school students have been accurate every election for the last 56 years, and the high school students picked Trump as well. I learned that after, you know.
Well, who was it? It wasn't Al Franken, but it was one of the comedians who also sort of warned people. No, it was Michael Moore. He kind of had a bead on that.
Yeah, he said he was going to win, too. Yeah, Michael Moore said that, too, yeah.
So, I mean, I have to assume that you're not thrilled about the outcome of the election, even though you sensed it was coming. How are you going to get through the next 4 years?
I may have to leave the country.
So many left-wing people say that, but you're not really going to, unless you get a movie somewhere where you have to shoot it. But
I really find, you know, there's just a lot of other places in the world that I could enjoy living and coming back here to work. That would work for me. Come here and work and live somewhere else.
Wow. Wow, that's all right, that's pretty harsh. Just because you disagree so vehemently with his cabinet and his policies?
No.
Okay. Hello. Hello. Oh, that really tailed off there. Welcome back. Hello, shalom.
That is interesting, because I said we are living in a dictatorship already, and people are not recognizing that this is a bloodless coup.
Well, and as you said that, your phone cut out, and we didn't get
exactly.
That. Well, at least they let you do it on the rebound. It's kind of like people reading Elizabeth Warren's speeches later on, you know? But, have you been politically active? Did you march in the Women's March? Do you have a pussy hat and all that?
No, I don't. That was not, I think that's kind of an old-fashioned way of protesting, and I think that what we're up against is a modernized version. We're in a surveillance state, and I think we've got to up-level our activism to match the opponents who are using high-level technology. Even the way they got him into office, it's the same marketing team that pushed Brexit. They're using this psychometrics and using all this information about what people post online and sending specific messages to them based on what they believe and what they think will get them interested, sending messages to people to get them to not vote, sending messages to get them to vote. So I think that we have to, on the left, have to update what we're doing, because they're the minority and they won.
Fair enough. It almost sounds like we have to match their psychological 1984 dirty tricks with our own. But maybe that is the way, you know? I don't know.
Well, if you're playing in a game that's rigged, you're not going to win playing fair.
Right. But so stooping to their level is the only way?
I don't call it stooping to their level. I call it being realistic. There's a sort of test that they did with children in Mexico and in America, where they had this game, and it was like whoever won, you know, when people won the game, if kids won the game, they would get a prize. So if you could, no matter, every time you won, you'd get more prizes. So what they found with the American children is that the American children just played so hard that nobody ever won. The Mexican children figured this out, like, oh, so basically when you win, you get a prize. So those kids kept winning and losing, and they got gajillions of prizes, and they just shared them with one another.
Huh.
It's just a different way of thinking. And Americans are known worldwide as being some of the poorest sort of negotiators in the world. Us don't do it well because we have this idea about we've set a standard of what behavior is supposed to be. And it's not realistic. It's not how we actually behave. It's just a sort of front we put out there to tell people to do, but it's not what we do. So I'm for being more realistic about what's actually going on and meeting your opponent where they are.
Okay.
There's no other way to win the game.
So are you, more specifically, will you personally over the next 2 years, 4 years, be more involved?
I think that I may, if I stay, run for a local office.
Oh, wow. Okay. But that, well, how will you have the time to act?
I have the time, believe me. I'm on my union and do negotiating. I'm thinking I might run for a school board, because that's a really important, you know, Betty Davos and Sessions. I think that might be a place where I could be, you know, make a difference.
Start printing up your vouchers now, I'll tell you. Let's get back to the theater, though. That's a little more fun. You are in a musical called Jelly's Last Jam. And that was really what put you, I think, in a lot of ways, on the map for people.
Absolutely.
In the theater. And among your co-stars, by the way, Gregory Hines, Keith David, Brenda Braxton, Savion Glover, Ruben Santiago Hudson, our friend of the neighborhood, Stanley Wayne Mathis, Stephanie Pope. When you were in that show, you were still pretty young still then. Could you tell that some of these people would go on to be have levels of longevity and fame? Oh, isn't
I? Absolutely.
You could. How could you tell?
Because they're very, very talented. It's an extraordinary talent.
But then again, having done Broadway musicals and lots of Broadway shows, I'm sure you've run across a lot of Broadway talent across the board. It doesn't get cast unless it has talent. Why some make it, as it were, and others don't quite?
I think that's, you know, a function of the elite deciding, oh, I would like you to be at my party. I mean, it's really a kind of luck of the draw thing, and it's like beyond being talented, the people who are wealthy and who fund all those things have to feel comfortable enough to want to hang out with you outside of your work.
So it's who you know, right, where you go, who you blow, that sort of thing, to some extent.
Like,
wow.
Lots of talented people who haven't had the privilege of being, you know, chosen to be in that club.
Well, do you have any people that you would consider mentors or people who guided you along early on, any teachers if you went to acting school or any directors, fellow actors?
Certainly, having been chosen by Hal Prince and Steve Sondheim to be in a play, that mentored me and gave me opportunities that most people never get, okay?
Okay.
And then George C. Wolfe, really, I wouldn't have had a career without him. He cast me in Jelly's Last Jam. He also cast me in The Wild Party. He cast me in Carolina Change. That's three Broadway shows right there.
And not too shabby either as far as the people involved. Now, since you mentioned The Wild Party, gotta go there. You work with two very, very different kinds of people on that show. First of all, Eartha Kitt. Do you have any Eartha Kitt stories?
I love Eartha. She's just an extraordinary woman. I guess my best Eartha Kitt story is Eartha, you know, 70s, could kick her leg to her face. She always wore weights and walk vests, which I now do in my life because she taught me that you have to, you know, build your bones as you get older.
Mm.
But there was a number in the show, and they were going to have Eartha get up and dance a little section in the middle of the number. And I was like, then I'm not dancing after that, because first of all, people are going to be like amazed that at her age she can dance, and then they're just going to be amazed that she dances so great, and I can't compete with that. So I was like, nope.
It's just, I mean, there's something about her. She's just wonderful. Now, on the other side of the coin, though, and I know some people don't necessarily want to speak bad about people, but Mandy Patinkin was in there, too. I have my issues with him. He was not very nice to this program. So, tell me something horrible about Mandy Patinkin.
I can't really tell you anything horrible about Mandy Patinkin.
Wasn't he going crazy in that show?
Thought about Mandy Patinkin. You know, Mandy is very committed. He is a method actor par extraordinaire. He just goes for it. And I think that a lot of actors, you know, in that show, because he was the star and he is a star, they didn't feel comfortable enough meeting him where he was. If they had, he would have embraced it. So for me in that show, he used to be, you know, this lascivious guy grabbing my breast and all that stuff, and I would just punch him.
Oh, well, it was both a mutual character, yes?
It was totally in character, but I felt like if that's where you're going, this is where I'm going, and he loved it. He told me that I was one of his three favorite actors on the planet, me, Diane Venora, and Meryl Streep.
Whoa.
So, I mean, I can understand that if you don't feel comfortable enough to meet that, then you just feel like you're being abused. There was one story, though, where Mandy was having a scene, and we were staged to be on opposite sides of the stage, and Mandy, you know, emotionally got into this thing where he just walked across the stage and started shaking me, and it made, you know, the stage managers went crazy because there was lighting and all of this stuff like that, and so they sort of made him apologize to me. I was like, okay, he's in the moment. It was an honest moment, and he said to me, I really just wanted to spit in your face, and I was thinking, now that, Mandy, I'm so glad.
Well, what if he, the next night, if you had allowed him, or if the stage manager had allowed him to shake you that hard, and he got, quote-unquote, his character, got away with it, the next night he might want to go even further, because he'd be addicted to that adrenaline, and he would have spit in your face. Would that have been too far?
We'd have had an honest moment around that, and I respect that, you know? I respect that.
And when he shook you, though, he didn't bruise anything, he didn't hurt anything. It was hard, but you didn't get hurt.
I did not get hurt, and it just wasn't what the staging was, and, you know, nobody knew it was coming, so but I was fine.
Okay, good. I mean, as I said, he's one of the very, very few people in the world I want to hear bad things about, just because I had a bad experience with him. But tell me some wonderful things about other actors that you were, anybody who comes to mind.
I've had the privilege of working with so many amazing actors. Kathy Chalfant, David Margulies, Dennis O'Hare, Ruben Santiago Hudson, Keith David.
Well, tell us some anecdotes, so some stories, amusing ones, or ones that show what great people they are. It's great to name drop, but I want to hear, like, oh, this happened.
Well, here's a story. I don't know if it's an amusing story, but when we were doing Jelly's Last Jam, I had done it in L.A. with another actor, Oba Babatunde. and then they were going to Broadway, and I didn't know this, but it was always supposed to be Gregory's show. So everybody on the crew used to say, ooh, Gregory's going to do the Kama Sutra with you. Y'all going to do the Kama Sutra. And I was like, what are they talking about? What are they talking about? So when we got to this bedroom scene,
oh boy,
Gregory started saying, well, I wanted to do, no, here's where we're going to have anal sex, and here's where we're going to have oral sex, and all this stuff like that. And I was just frozen, like literally frozen, disassociated, horrified. And as soon as the rehearsal session ended, I ran to my agent. I was like, get me out of this play. I am not doing that.
Well, you would be miming it fully clothed.
I wasn't even miming it fully clothed in a musical. I wasn't doing it. I was like, no, I'm not doing that. And so from that point on, Gregory just never spoke to me again. He sort of, I don't think the director would have ever allowed that to happen, but I was the person who got to be blamed for the fact that I thought it was a very sexy scene without anal sex and oral sex and all that. But he never spoke to me.
Hmm.
And he was public about it. When we were on stage, it was magical. He was just extraordinary. But off stage, he made a public point that he did not speak to me.
Ooh.
But when I was going through my divorce, and I, was surprised, hit with a sort of surprise, blindsided with divorce papers, I needed to hire a lawyer who needed a $15,000 retainer. And I didn't know anybody who had that kind of money except Gregory Hines. And I went to him and I asked him if he would loan me that money. And he did.
That's, I don't understand actors. It's, what a weird profession, I have to admit. It's like he's your mortal enemy, but not on the stage. But then you go to him, and then he's like, oh, okay, I will help you. Strange people. But it's nice to hear good things and bad things, I guess, about Gregory. And you know what, if Mandy Patinkin had asked you, started doing butt sex with you in that show, would you have gone with it? He was, oh, it's Mandy, okay. I'll meet him on his level.
Believe me, Mandy tried to do everything with me.
Just
fought it out.
Well, I guess you met him, you didn't go on all fours, you went on three. You kept one hand above the floor when it was going out.
Exactly.
We're talking with Tonya Pinkins, the delightful, funny, and serious actress. Remember, by the way, you can see the play that she is directing. It is a one-act play. Let me find the... I have it written down here. It's called An Illusion by a playwright named Marita... I hope I'm not mispronouncing this. Bonner. It's Exit An Illusion. Forgive me.
Yes.
That's the name of the play. It's part of three one-acts that are in Visionary Voices at the Gloria Maddox Theater. It's on West 26th Street, and it's running from February 18th through March 8th.
February 15th.
Oh, 15th. I'm sorry. Oi. Oi. I gotta change my glasses. There you go. February 15th through March 8th. And you can get tickets and more information at AmericanBard.org. AmericanBard.org. Now, only fair to ask you how you got involved in Visionary Voices. Did you get to choose this play? Was this something you said, oh, I want to direct this 100 or 80-year-old play by this African-American playwright? No, I'm serious. Okay.
I was at an event honoring two dear friends of mine, Ron Simons and Shakina Nasak. I met Sherry Wicks, managing director of American Bard, through my friend Eric, who runs Project One Voice, and he introduced us, and she sent me the play, and we talked about it, and we had a kind of meeting of the minds, and she invited me to direct the play.
Oh, lovely. Great. And are you having a great time directing it?
It is a fantastic play.
Ooh.
It's 5 pages long, and it's like all of life happens in those 5 pages. It's an amazing play, and my actors...
you can name them.
T. Anderson and Morgan McGuire and Carl... What is Carl's last name? Disc. They are amazing, and I'm very excited about it. Great design team, and it's going to be a really fascinating and very short evening. It'll be an hour-long evening.
With three plays? That's wonderful. Nobody has an attention span anymore. An hour is almost to me. You have to be like all dramas on TV are 48 minutes. So you may have to still do some cutting, I think. Maybe a little. Maybe of the intermissions. But
yeah.
What do you now? You've been on both sides of the aisle. You've been an actress for many years. Now you're directing a lot more. Which do you prefer? Would you give up one to do the other full time, or you really need to do both?
I need to do them all. I need to write. I need to direct. I mean, I'm still acting. I'm still in Madam Secretary. I'm going to be on Scandal on March 2nd. I'm going to shoot The Strain. I'm shooting The Strain, actually, while we're getting ready to open this show. I'm flying back and forth from Toronto.
Oh, nice.
And I need to do them all. I really do. I'm actually, yeah, I need to do it all. I get bored very easily.
And again, with four children, you're not allowed to get bored. Do you do any soap operas? Because people also might know you from a couple of different soap operas, including All My Children.
In All My Children, and I did As the World Turns.
Right. You're done with that. That was a while ago. You're not doing that anymore, or are you?
They don't exist. The shows don't exist anymore.
Shows you how much soap operas I watch.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you enjoy that? Was it high pressure? Is it great work for a New York actor? What's it like doing a soap?
Great work for New York. You got 90 pages a day to do, and so it's like you're working hard, and All My Children was a show I grew up watching, so how exciting to get to be on a show that you watch. Like, that's how I feel about The Strain and Scandal and Gotham. Shows I watch, and then you get to go and be on them. It's like, what could be better than that? It's so cool.
When a show like that comes on, you go, you act in it, you do your scene or two or three scenes, right? Then you go home 3 weeks, 4 months later, it goes on TV. Can you watch the scene as part of the rest of the show and enjoy the show? Or suddenly is it like, oh, there I am. Let's see how I did. How did I look? I would have done that differently. Do you distance yourself, or are you right there again?
10 years ago, I couldn't watch myself at all. But lately, you have to watch yourself. So many auditions these days are self-taped. You have to make it yourself, and so you've got to look, and you've got to know the different styles of different shows, and you've got to be able to look at yourself and see if you've nailed it before you send in those tapes. So, yeah, I can watch a show and watch myself and enjoy the show and still go, okay, you could have got that a little better. You know what I mean? But I can actually watch myself and enjoy it.
Cool. Let me ask you about maybe your best-known theater role would probably be the leading role in Caroline or Change. How long did it take you to nail the harshness but also the depth of that character?
It was just so easy. Ooh. I never even took a script home. That show just was so well written and such a dream that it just came to me. I mean, I didn't have to do any work for that. It was just like a couture set of clothing, a tailored outfit. It was just magical.
Did you ever get any notes or suggestions or great compliments from Tony Kushner, who wrote the book for Caroline or Change?
I think Tony was just always great, and what's wonderful about him is he's collaborative and he's humble, and he says, you know, actors, at a certain point, an actor knows a play better than a playwright, knows the character better than the playwright. So, you know, it was great to just go, Tony, I feel like it would be this, or Tony, I feel like that. There was a different version of Lot's Wife than the one that ended up in the show, and I loved the other version. And when we came back to actually do the first production at the Public, it was not in the script. There was nothing in the script, and I... You know, it was a little upsetting, but I thought, these people are brilliant. Tony Kushner, Janine Tesori, George C. Wolfe, they must have something better in mind. When we finally got to rehearse that number, Tony said to me that when I did the other version of the number, the show was over. There just couldn't be any more show after that number. And he was very committed to the show ending with the children, you know.
But now, see, there you're siding with the director and taking the long view of the director having a vision of and the writer having the vision of a show. And even though it was an amazing moment, sometimes, as any writer knows, you have to kill your babies, right, to make the show better, shorter, for a myriad of reasons that an individual actor will not necessarily see the forest for the trees. Okay, I think you know where I'm going with this. You were in another show a year and a half ago. For a bit, during rehearsals anyway, when Classic Stage Company was doing Mother Courage. And there, you really clashed with the director on that, Brian Kulik, over the portrayal of Mother... You were the star, Mother Courage. Why weren't you able... I'm not throwing this necessarily on you, but why wouldn't you say in that same situation, you know what, he's the director, it's his vision, I kind of have to fit into that. What did you object to so strongly that... You know, you were like, you know what, it's not going to work, I'm going to leave.
When you get to be as old as I am, you know, I feel when I go and see shows that are bad, the actors are responsible for that. Because you were in the room, and I think most of my career, if I'm in the room, I'm going to make the play better. because I'm going to fight for the play to be better. This was a case where what was happening, I just couldn't stand by it at all.
Did you feel it was racist? What was it? Was it just not? This is horrible.
I didn't say it was racist. It just wasn't good.
Ooh. But no, but is that your call? I mean, isn't that the player, the adapter and director's call?
It's their call, and it's their call to put another actor in it, but I wasn't going to do that. I was not going to have my name on something that I felt was subpar.
But here's you signed up for it. Had you seen the script when you put, because, you know, they were doing Mother Courage, but they adapted it.
A script and how a script is executed are very different. So, yeah, I saw the script and then how the script was being executed, and there were just things, you know. Mother Courage is a story about a woman and a cart. They cut the cart.
Yeah, but if they gave her a knapsack, I mean, I didn't see the production. But I'm saying, is that knapsack really? I mean, there's something, got to be something a little deeper than that. I mean, it's an adaptation.
Deeper than that. It was not. If they had told me all the things that were going to be there before I signed on, I would never have signed on.
Aha. Okay, that's a little more fair, I suppose. I mean, the joke, I guess, is that you didn't find it either specific enough or black enough anymore.
But that had anything to do with any of it.
Oh.
That maybe how somebody wanted to make it, but that had nothing to do with it at all. And that's not even what I said about it.
Okay, so you just thought it sucked, basically. You just thought it was not working. Well, then, you know, to put the word on it, you know, it was just a stinky show, and you didn't want to be involved in a stinky show. Okay.
Well, I mean, you know, I had spent months talking to them about making this show, and then when I get in and we're not doing what we talked about, and then I'm having conversations, and, you know, they're agreeing with everything I'm saying, and then they're not doing the things that we're talking about in their agreement. I mean, you know, you can't put all that in a 1,600-word article. But this was not like overnight I'm going to go. We were talking, and they were like, yes, yes, yes. And so at a certain point, I realized that it was like Donald Trump. Yeah, yeah, yeah. For the people. I am for the people. And then it's a whole other thing on it. So I was like, oh, I finally get it. You all are going to say whatever you think I need to hear. And as long as I'm here to open the show, you're never going to do anything you said you could do. Oh, I get it. Let me go.
Whoa. Now, yeah, and you left in the middle. This was before it started previews. Left during rehearsals, at least?
I left during previews.
Wow. Okay. Did you end up seeing the production with a different actress, or you stepped away? No, okay, I'm just wondering. But here's the deal. Have you had contact with Brian Kulik and some of the other actors you kind of left in the lurch for a while? I mean, have you had a rapprochement? Have you made up? Or no?
Some of the actors don't speak to me at all.
Okay.
Any of them I've seen, and we still talk. And I haven't seen Brian. We just haven't run into each other. But he was very polite to me at the end on the last day that I was there. I don't think we have any hard feelings. It was just an artistic difference.
But do you think now, I mean, with the public theater, or the CSC, I doubt they would use you in anything else. No offense, but that would be...
I don't think that's true at all, because the new artistic director and I are planning to work together at some point.
No kidding. Oh, wow. Okay, great. Congratulations. I mean, it's nice that you stuck up for yourself. I mean, I do understand that. And I will give you 120% credit for doing that video that you mentioned earlier in our conversation. People don't know what we're talking about. It was a roast challenge. If you could tell folks what you did, it's amazing.
I was in TIFF in Toronto at the Black Houses, had a panel, and the kids on YouTube do this thing called a rap roast video, where you just take some rap music and you roast yourself. You just, you know, diss yourself about everything about yourself. And Isaac Klein wrote it for me. I told him what I wanted it to say and gave him the content. And his friend, James Stewart, decided Locke's Wife would be the great tune for it. So they put together this rap, and we just hit everything in my life and, you know, all the hate that was out there. We didn't get everything. We could have got a lot more in. But we got a lot of hate, and it was just the most fun I have had maybe in 2 decades. I laughed so hard for 4 months putting that together.
It's really, wow, it took you 4 months to, I mean, you got a lot of stars in there with cameo appearances. I think Donna Murphy's in there, and people from the theaters.
Ever so Russell and Tony Goldwyn and Jeff Perry and Joe Morton and Ellen Page and Amy Semitz and Kate Mara. Yeah,
just out of the blue, they pop in. And I've got to say, it's really, really, it's catchy too, by the way, musically, but it's also really, really funny. And it took, I've got to say, you don't have cojones as far as I know, but it took a pair to do that video. And I absolutely commend everybody to go see on YouTube the Roast Challenge by Tonya Pinkins, our guest in the neighborhood. I guess it was liberating and fun for you to do that, to just have it all out there, you know. There's nothing you can say about me that I haven't already said by myself. There's about myself. There's something very freeing about that, I think.
Yes.
Problem is, see, you're talking to a Jew. And Jews, we're always self-roasting. Every second of the day, I'm bald, I'm fat, I've got a bad prostate. My children hate me. You know, we don't need to do a video. It's just constant and extreme with us. Just letting you know. Oh, again, no laughs on that. Oh, well. What a shame. Let's talk a little bit more, if you have a couple more minutes.
Yeah.
Oh, wonderful. With the delightful Tonya Pinkins. Let me ask you now, you've had, and this has also been in the paper, you've had, you know, marriages that didn't do so well and then custody stuff. Where are you now as far as the love game? Are you dating? Is there a person in your life? Where are you at?
I am an emancipated woman.
Which means you're stooping a lot of different people? No, what does that mean?
No, I have someone that I've been seeing for many years.
Oh.
They live in another country, and that's perfect.
Oh, how often do you get to actually see him?
Enough.
Oh.
3 times a year.
So I think you're done with marriage, but...
Definitely.
Okay. But it sounds like you have this nice, really good arrangement with this guy, which is lovely. Which is
very nice.
Let me ask you, I'm looking for, speaking of people who had interesting marital and other situations, I didn't even realize this, you worked on a movie called Fading Gigolo.
Yeah.
With Woody Allen.
Yeah.
Tell me something about Woody Allen.
What can I tell you about Woody Allen?
It doesn't have to be funny, it's just an interesting thing, or the way he was.
You know, John Turturro is really, really, really funny.
He's also in
Yeah, John directed it. And, you know, the very first day that Woody and I shot, there was a scene where we were supposed to sort of cuddle, and Woody was not going to cuddle with me. And so John had to turn the scene into something else. But by the second time we were there, there was another scene where he gave me this couch. And John and I had talked to the phone. He's like, you know, Tonya, if I could have just a couple more days with you, I'd have you and Woody in bed naked. You should go ahead. You should just grab him. So the next scene, I just, like, wrapped my body around.
He is an erotic man. What, did he jump and scream?
No, he went quite with it.
Oh, he went with it. Good for him.
Totally went with it.
So what happened the first time? Was he just shy?
He just turned his back to me. I was like, okay, we're not cuddling.
I can see him do it, too. I mean, obviously, if you were, 55 years younger, you know.
Yeah.
If you were, like, between 5 and 15, maybe. I'm kidding! Just a joke.
But not really.
No, but not really. Hey, let me, one more theater question. I forgot to ask about this, because we talked about a couple of your shows. I remember seeing Play On, and really having a great time with
that. Favorites that not enough people got to see.
Yes!
That's one of my favorite shows I ever did.
Now, I ask this of so many theater people that I talk to. Can you tell before opening night, or hell, but not even opening night, but like just before the reviews come out, can you sense during previews whether it's going to be a hit, a flop, something in between, or it isn't until a day later the press comes out and boom, and then you realize, aha, we're going to run for a year, or...
Nope.
Start looking for work.
Can't tell it all, and usually if I like it, the critics aren't going to like it. But Play On got the best reviews of any show that season, and we just had a producer who was just a not nice person, and he closed that show. We were selling, audiences were standing on their feet, 3 or 4 numbers in it. He just closed that show before anybody even got to see it. He closed it the week the Tony nominations came out because he wasn't happy with the number of nominations, so
Ooh.
I think if we run, we would have won the Tony.
Is this producer still producing?
I don't think they allow him to anymore.
Oh, this isn't Garth who's over in another country, is it?
No, but Garth is producing.
Yeah, that's true. He's with the Magnum Suzatsky thing.
Yeah. He's got a show coming in.
And also, here's one that... Now, it's hilarious, because it's true, you can never tell with these things. Obviously, Hamilton, you're not in Hamilton, but that's a monster show. It brought rap back to Broadway. Fine, it's humongous. You were in a rap show, a serious rap show, and it closed in, I think, 3 weeks, called Holler If You Hear Me, about Tupac Shakur. Why didn't that take off?
Bad marketing.
Ooh. Well, I mean, you kind of knew. What could they do to market? It was a rap show about Tupac Shakur. I mean, it sells itself to a certain audience, with all due respect.
But they didn't advertise to that audience. They didn't put Tupac's name up. They shied away from that. This is a man who sold 10 million albums worldwide. They did not have Tupac's name above it. So people who were Tupac fans did not know the show existed. They marketed that show to an audience who wasn't ever going to come. The title of it was not good. Holler If You Hear Me. What is a holler if you hear me?
Hold on. If this man sold 10 million records, people who bought those records would recognize that line, no? Or maybe not.
The name of a Broadway show.
Okay.
Like, some other marketing person who came in late in the game said it should have been called Dear Mama.
Ooh.
Dear Mama would have bought that's one of his most popular songs. It would have brought the church ladies in. Everybody can get behind Dear Mama. They tried to sell it to the mainstream audience who was never going to come. And instead of just selling it to his audience, to Tupac's audience, and selling it as the Tupac musical, so that then those people would sell it out and everybody else couldn't get a ticket, and that's what would have made it a hit, in my opinion. But, you know, I'm not doing the marketing, but that's my opinion.
No, everybody
was fantastic.
Yeah.
Producer Eric Gold was amazing because he, even though people told him to close it on opening night, he knew it was a good show, and so he gave those tickets away to the audience who probably would have bought it. So we had full houses every night, standing ovations, just because he was generous enough to do that so that we could have a show.
That is nice. That is good.
Yeah.
I mean, and then also for the actors, it does make a difference if you're there and it's a 95%, even if people haven't paid, you know, there's 95% full as opposed to 50% you can shoot moose in the balcony.
When the Sailors were in town, he gave them all tickets. We were packed every night.
Wow. What was it like playing for a room full of Sailors? That kind of show, I mean.
It was a great audience. That was the perfect audience for the show. We played to the dream audience for the show. They just had free tickets, but they were the audience for the show.
Let me ask you, as someone who has done now quite a lot of Broadway as well as off, what would be your recommendation? You know, ticket prices are insane. Broadway, the whole area has become a real tourist district. How would you help or save the old gray... Well, the Times is the old gray lady. The Great White Way. The one that's the dying... Fabulous invalid. That's what I was trying to say. What would be your suggestions to make Broadway better?
Broadway is doing really damn well.
Well, money-wise, yes. But is it as culturally diverse as it ought to be? Is it available to as many people as it ought to be? Are they doing the kinds of shows they ought to be? Or you think Broadway's just fine?
You know, I would love to see more shows that had meaning, that had some inclusiveness. I'd like the theater to reflect what the world outside of the theater looks like. I think that the brilliance of the theater is that you're actually physically in a room with someone. So if you had more people on the stage who looked like the people who are being scapegoated as enemies, if they were on the stage and people had the opportunity to be in the same room with them and see them in the theater rather than on a screen, I think that it would go a long way towards people getting more comfortable with people who they're never going to meet, because we're still a very segregated culture. I'd like to see, you know, but people go to the theater to be entertained. So if you could include some meaning and some inclusion, I think that would be great. But Broadway's doing great.
Well, and you have been doing great as well, Tonya Pinkins. I want to remind everybody, before we let you go, that you can see her rather short, but apparently wonderful and brilliant, one-act play that she is directing. It's called Exit and Illusion by Marita Bonner. It's part of Visionary Voices, playing at the Gloria Maddox Theater on West 26th Street. For tickets, you can go to the American Bard, not the, just AmericanBard.org, and it's running from February 15th through March 8th in Manhattan. And last question for you before we let you go, and we want to thank you, by the way, so much for doing this. Let me ask, if people wanted to see you in either a movie or on a TV series that you were on that where they could get it on Netflix or something, what are one or two roles that people might not know that you were in that you're really proud of, that you did I was really good in that role, or that's a really great movie or a great episode?
112263.
Ooh, please explain. No offense, I don't know what that is.
112263 is a Stephen King novel that Hulu did a miniseries about. James Franco plays a man who goes back in time to try to stop the Kennedy assassination. And that's available on Hulu. And I play a character who was actually a Caucasian woman in the book, Ms. Mimi Corcoran, who's kind of the best friend of Franco when he goes back in time. And that's who I play in that miniseries.
Well, everybody go rent that on Netflix. Everybody go see Tonya Pink, or see Tonya Pinkins's. Yeah. Oh,
that's on Hulu.
Pinkins's work. Forgive me for not being able to wrap my tongue around that. Last question then. What do you hope for over the, not politically, but I mean artistically and creatively over the next 5-10 years?
I hope I get a series regular role, and I hope I write and direct some films.
Sounds pretty good.
I get some major distribution.
Oh, okay. I mean, that sounds good to me. And you know what? I and everybody listening hope that for you as well. Because it's just been a wonderful delight and so funny and so smart to talk to. Thank you so much, Tonya Pinkins,
for joining us. Thank you, Rabbi.
Shalom to you.